You're listening to the Carnegie Tsinghua China and the World podcast, a series of conversations with Chinese and international experts on China's foreign policy, international role, and China's relations with the world. Brought to you from the Carnegie Tsinghua Center for Global Policy, located in Beijing. I'm Paul Hanley, the director of the Carnegie Tsinghua Center, and I'll be your host. Today, I'm delighted to be at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace in Washington, D.C., and speaking with my colleague Yukon Huang, senior associate in the Carnegie Asia Program, where his research focuses on China's economic development and its impact on Asia and the global economy. Previously, Yukon was the World Bank's country director for China and for Russia. He served as an advisor to the World Bank team that worked with the State Council in China to prepare the joint report, China 2030. Yukon is an A-list commentator for the Financial Times on China. He's also working on a new book to be published later this year entitled Why Do Views on China Differ So Much? Yukon, thank you very much for being with us today.
Pleasure being here.
So we're speaking today several weeks after China A-shares plummeted in early July. China's equity market is now at levels around 30% below the peak, their peak in June 12th, but only after heavy-handed intervention by the Chinese government, including a virtual ban on short selling, restrictions on selling by major shareholders, loosening of margin lending regulations. These interventions in China's stock market have raised questions in the global financial community about China's commitment to market reforms and has also had an impact on the credibility of the Chinese leadership. Many observers have noted the Chinese stock market began to surge last summer, in the summer of 2014, despite the conflicting evidence of a slowdown in China's economy. There's a similar disconnect between the stock market and China's real economy in the 2000s, when China's economy was growing at double digits, but yet the Chinese stock market tumbled. What explains the disconnect between China's stock market and its economic fundamentals? And in your view, what caused the stock market to surge so dramatically over the past year? And will this crash have a meaningful impact on the real economy?
To understand what's going on today, we have to go back to the last time such an incident occurred, which is basically in the 2006 to 2008 period. If you look at that period, a decade ago, China was growing at 10% a year. It's generating huge trade surpluses, but its stock market wasn't moving. And all of a sudden, it took off. And for many people, they were wondering why it was for an economy doing so well. The market, in fact, hadn't moved at all. Mm-hmm. And the answer is the market really wasn't reflective of the economy. It was largely dominated by state enterprises. It wasn't actually linked to the well-being of what I call many private firms who were not listed. It also had a reputation of being like a gambling casino. Mm-hmm. You never knew what was going on and what the information was. So skepticism about the market 10 years ago was very, very strong. Then what happened? Well, at some point, people began to ask the question, how come the market is not taking off? There was actually speculation in the West. There was a lot of surging markets globally. So in fact, the market started to respond. That was actually what I would call market-driven, greed-driven surge. Mm-hmm. So the Shanghai Index went from 1,000 to 6,000 and very quickly fell back to 2,000. And then interestingly enough, for 5 or 6 years, it didn't change.
Right.
Okay. So you go through the global financial crisis, you wouldn't actually expect it to change. There's a lot of uncertainty. Then China was actually doing very well post-global financial crisis. And then, of course, in the last 3 or 4 years, it's been a slowdown. So you wouldn't have expected the market actually to change much. There's uncertainty, then it slowed down. What happened? Why did, all of a sudden, a year, year and a half ago, did the market take off? And it clearly was not driven by economic fundamentals, because the economic mm-hmm. factors were not strong. It was driven by government policies.
Right.
Now, which policies? Two major decisions were taken by the government. One was China's having a debt problem. Corporations were borrowing too much from the banks. So why not encourage them to go to the equity markets, float shares, and fund their expansion through stocks rather than borrowing? That would be good for the debt issue. Mm-hmm. The second objective was China wants to internationalize the RMB. It wants to open its capital markets to the world. It wants people to invest in options besides the property market, which is seen as being overextended. Mm-hmm. So why not encourage them to go to equities? Now, both these objectives actually are reasonable. China should have a stronger equity market. China does have a debt problem. Companies should be going to the equity market. Mm. So this is the case where the objectives were what I would call sensible, mm-hmm. but how it was being implemented turned out to be not carefully thought through. Mm-hmm. But once that sentiment got out there, and you have a very strong leadership, and the leadership says the market's got to be stronger, it's going to get higher, people should use it, then there's a lot of faith in the system, and the buyers are largely individuals, retailers, not so much mutual funds or big corporations, but individuals. And they have a lot of faith in the government, a lot of faith in the leadership, so they're buying. And at the time they're buying, China also has margin trading, something they didn't have 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So you can borrow. And margin trading was basically there since 2010. So it's been there for a few years. Mm-hmm. But what changed was that people began to encourage people to borrow on margins. And those with limited money, particularly those who came at the later stages, right. they began to borrow. So when the market was starting to surge, and it goes from 2,000 to 3,000 to 4,000, probably the system should have been saying, hey, this is going too fast. Mm-hmm. Who should be saying that? And the answer should be the regulatory agency, the China Securities and Regulatory Commission, because their role is to regulate, mm-hmm. identify risks. But they weren't doing that. They were actually talking up the market, as were all the other officials. So basically, the market started to climb even faster and faster. Now, there were actually some other underlying factors which people have not been aware of. China wanted membership in the emerging market indices that are used globally. And if they qualified to be included in these indices, it would have triggered actually a global demand for Chinese securities because they had to have China in the system. That would have led to a very significant bump into the indices, even beyond this. So some smart people were actually saying, if this happens, I can make a lot of money. But in June, that decision was suspended, postponed. And that's triggered the whole selling off because the smart people realized that extra surge from being quoted in global markets would not materialize. And then when it started to go down, margin trading, calling in the margins, accentuated the decline. People began to panic. They began to realize the government can support this, and now you have the equity crash. So this is a very different kind of a market bubble. It's not a market bubble. It's a government policy-driven bubble. We've never seen anything quite like this in other parts of the world. And this is what makes this particular case very difficult from other examples.
You've argued that political consequences for this China equity market bubble are the most serious for the leadership. We haven't heard much from President Xi Jinping or Premier Li Keqiang on this. There's some speculation out there why that is. What do you make of this?
Well, this is actually a serious problem because it's not a market-driven bubble. It was a bubble driven by the faith of the leadership, confidence in the top leadership. And the top leadership actually stuck their necks out. So you had the senior leaders actually making speeches saying the market's going to go higher. And you had the regulatory agencies saying this is going to go up. So those who might normally be introducing caution are actually talking the other way. Now that it is bust, now it's gone down, the credibility of the political system is a major risk. The risk is not an economic risk. After only about 7% of the households actually own stock, the total wealth of Chinese households in the equity market is probably between 10 to 15%. Most of it is still in property markets, savings accounts, and other options. So it's not an economic problem in the sense that this is going to wipe out assets, it's going to have a ripple effect. Its problem is its credibility of the leadership because the surge was based upon faith in the leadership. So now people begin to wonder, do they really have control? Can I trust their word? And this is, I think, a very delicate issue for the leadership now.
As you look ahead, what do you expect to see in the equity markets going forward?
Well, the question is, when the markets surge and they go up, and they go up very rapidly because of margin lending and speculation, the downturn is also exaggerated. Mm-hmm. It will tend to fall below what probably makes sense. Mm-hmm. So in a normal surge up, you go up too high, usually go down too high. So precisely when the index, let's say a couple of weeks ago, was hitting around 3,500, the government started to step in with these draconian measures to basically buy and prop up the market. And the question then, if you think about it intrinsically, what is the bottom? What is a reasonable level? Mm-hmm. And personally, I would say it's actually around what it was. So there's no particular reason to actually say it shouldn't be much higher, or you don't really necessarily want to go much higher. Mm-hmm. You try to make that the floor. Mm-hmm. But instead, the government went the other way. They actually talked about pushing it back to 45. Mm. And that actually is above what it should be. Mm. Now, is 3,000, for example, or 2,500 too low? In my view, it is too low. But if you didn't interfere, would it go that far? The answer is it possibly could, mm-hmm. because you also go overshoot on the down. Mm-hmm. So what I think that also a mistake was, if you want to support it, don't try to say it's going to go way up. Try to support it by saying we're trying to cushion the downfall. It's going beyond what we think it should be. Mm-hmm. Don't try to actually say that it's going to go much higher, because when you do, what happens? Some people come in to buy and the expectation is going to go up. Yeah. If the market can't support it, you're introducing additional difficulties in actually trying to stabilize this. Mm-hmm. So I think mm-hmm. the actual way the government dealt with it has not been well done.
Well, thank you very much. I know you just came back from China, mm-hmm. so appreciate you spending so much time. This is sort of the middle of the night, your time right now with the jet lag. But thank you for spending time with us today. We always appreciate it. That's it for this edition of the Carnegie Tsinghua China and the World podcast. If you'd like to read Yukon's new paper on China debt, you can find this one and other articles on the Carnegie website at www.ceip.org. I encourage you to visit and see all the work of our scholars at the Carnegie Tsinghua Center. Thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in next time.